From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Coming up later this hour, we'll continue our conversations with Illinois athletes heading to the Olympics. Darryl Sullivan is a native of Marion in southern Illinois. He holds school records for the high jump at Tennessee, and we'll talk about his hopes for Tokyo. That's coming up later this hour. But first, by now, you are familiar with the seemingly endless headlines and news reports about shootings and murders in Illinois. Every day, more people are shot, and not just in Chicago, which gets a lot of media attention, but also in Rockford, in Peoria, in Springfield, in Champaign. And every day, elected officials are asked what they are doing to stop it. This morning, less than an hour ago, Governor J.B. Pritzker signed a package of legislation dealing with criminal justice. We've talked about some of the ideas on the show recently, including one that would prohibit police from using deceptive tactics while interrogating people under age 18. Another is meant to encourage the use of restorative justice practices. In a news conference after signing the bills into law, the first question was about violence. Pritzker expressed sympathy for everyone who'd been affected by the spike.
It is incumbent upon elected officials to act to make sure that we are not only addressing it directly in the time period in which these challenges occur, but also ahead of time to make sure that we're attacking the underlying causes of violence, not just in the city of Chicago, but all across the state, because Chicago's not alone. Rockford, Carbondale, Quincy, Champaign. We have major cities across the state of Illinois that have seen increased violence especially during this period of COVID-19.
Pritzker was in Washington, D.C. yesterday, on Wednesday, and his trip included a one-on-one meeting with President Biden in the White House.
I raised the topic of gun violence in Chicago, which obviously is something that's on his mind, too. He's had a number of meetings this week on that topic. What I raised to him was I wanted to make sure two things, that he knew that the state is fully engaged in fighting the transmission of guns across the border from Indiana, as well as other states surrounding Illinois, all of which have gun laws that are much more lax than those we have here.
And Pritzker also wanted to make the point that the rise in violence in Illinois and Chicago is not unique to Illinois and Chicago.
You know, we live in Illinois and in the city of Chicago, and so we only focus on what's happening here, but this is happening across the nation. COVID-19 has brought on so many new challenges for big cities, for big states. And so there are places all across the country that are having the same challenges, and they're talking to the president as well. But Illinois is a focus for him, and I was very pleased with his response.
As Governor Pritzker and other elected officials focus on their policy and legislative responses to this run of shootings, a new report looks at the ways past policy responses have been enforced in Illinois. The report looked at people convicted of the felony illegal possession of a firearm and examined trends in how they are sentenced. The report came from the Center for Criminal Justice Research, Policy, and Practice at Loyola University of Chicago, of which David Olson is co-director. Olson is a professor in the Department of Criminal Justice and Criminology at Loyola. He's also one of the foremost criminologists in the state of Illinois, and he joins us now. Dave, thanks for being here. Good to talk with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Brian.
Also joining us is Garion Gatewood. He's executive director of the nonprofit Illinois Justice Project. Garion, great to talk with you again as well. Welcome back to the 21st.
Always a pleasure to be back here with you, Brian. Thanks for having me.
And listeners, we want to invite you to join the conversation as well. 888-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455. How do you think gun violence should be addressed in Illinois? Do you think it's all about harsher sentences for gun possession, as you will hear from some public officials? What about racial inequities when it comes to enforcing gun laws? We want to hear from you. Join the conversation by giving us a call, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. You can also tweet us at 21st Show. Dave, let's start with a little background here. What was the origin of this study?
So the origin really was our our recognition that there's a lot of public discourse and debate among elected officials and criminal justice practitioners about the extent and nature of gun violence, what people who illegally possess firearms look like in terms of their backgrounds and their propensity for violence. But there was little to no research in Illinois that actually sought to answer some of those questions empirically. So it really started as a recognition of the lack of objective empirical research to help guide the conversation and policy debate. And so we decided to undertake this with the hopes of shedding some light on this issue. It's an extremely complex topic, and oftentimes things get boiled down to sound bites, which are either inaccurate or fail to recognize the nuance and the complexity of these issues. So the research was really trying to provide that objectivity and evidence basis for the discussion.
Yeah, and I'm glad we have, I hope, the time to get into some of that nuance and evidence in our discussion today. But Garion, can you just, for people who may not be familiar, can you just talk a little bit about the current landscape of gun possession laws in Illinois? I mean, what constitutes a felony? How tough, if you want to look at it that way, historically, has Illinois been on gun laws?
Yeah, absolutely, Brian. So Illinois has some of the toughest gun laws in the country. We've often heard times where we've heard from, you know, some officials that say we need to be tougher on gun possession and violent crime, and they often conflate the two. They often conflate gun possession as a violent crime. We've seen that we have some of the toughest crimes in the country, but we also need to take a tougher approach on addressing the core issues of why there's a need to carry guns in certain communities for safety. You know, so there are a lot of gun possession crimes that constitute felonies here on our books in Illinois more than many others. Similar to what you heard at the top of the show, when Governor Pritzker mentioned some of our neighboring states have fewer harsher penalties than we do for gun possession and gun crime. So we should take some time to really address some of those core issues that lead to the need for gun possession as well.
And Dave, can you talk about that in terms of what you were looking at? What sort of offenses were included in the report? And just as importantly, what was left out? Because there is a distinction between mere possession of a firearm and actually using one in the context of a violent crime.
Right. I think one of the things we tried to do is at least make people aware of what that larger picture is. When you hear elected officials talk about gun crime or violent gun crime, it's not always clear what they're talking about. From the research we did, what we found was the majority of people arrested in Illinois for a crime that involves a gun, that crime is the possession of the firearm. It's not the use of a firearm in the commission of a violent crime or the unlawful discharge of a firearm. So when we talk about people arrested for, in quote, gun crime in Illinois, what it primarily involves is people who possess a firearm that are not legally allowed to possess a firearm, or they're possessing it in a way that is illegal. So in Illinois, it is illegal to carry on your person or in your car a firearm that's loaded and accessible. The one restriction is if you've gone through the process of obtaining a concealed carry permit, which requires a fairly extensive investment of time and money, as well as subjecting yourself to a background check from the state police. That is what we looked at. Primarily, it's those crimes that account for the felony offense of illegal possession of a firearm. All of them are felonies. So if you illegally possess a firearm in the state, it's a felony offense, which carries a lot of obvious implications. But as Garion pointed out, Illinois' laws around the possession of a firearm tend to be the most punitive in the country. So if you possess a loaded accessible firearm and you're not authorized to do so, that is a non-probationable crime. You must be sentenced to prison for that. The length of the prison sentence will vary depending on whether you have no prior felony convictions or if you've previously been convicted of a felony. But those were the crimes that we were focused on, those felony possession of a firearm offenses. We did not look at the crimes where someone's arrested and convicted for committing a violent crime with a firearm. They account for a small share of the cases, but those two are some of the most severely sanctioned crimes in both Illinois and in the country. If you're convicted of committing murder with a firearm in Illinois, it's a mandatory 45-year prison sentence, and you must serve 100% of that sentence. So we have extremely tough laws when it comes to using a gun in the commission of a violent crime, but also just for the possession of a firearm if you're not authorized to do so.
Let me take a moment to reintroduce my guests. We're speaking with David Olson, who's co-director at the Center for Criminal Justice Research, Policy, and Practice at Loyola University in Chicago, where he's also professor there, and Garion Gatewood, who is executive director of the Illinois Justice Project. And listeners, if you want to join our conversation, the number is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. And we have Mike calling on the line from Tilton, Illinois. I think I have that right. Mike, thank you for calling in.
Good morning, folks. I'm just starting to listen to the discussion starting. And Illinois may have very strict laws on the books, but if they're not prosecuted and used, or if they're or if the charge is plea bargained away, it doesn't have a deterrent effect.
Interesting. Okay, thank you for that comment, Mike. Garion, do you want to respond to that? I mean, do you think that is there evidence that you've seen that Illinois is sort of plea bargaining out gun possession versus actually following through with prosecutions?
Yeah. So, Brian, that's a great question from Mike, and I think that goes to the narrative, right? There's often this narrative that you see in the public sphere that prosecutors aren't doing their job and aren't prosecuting these crimes. But what you see is a massive population in DOC, a massive population in the local county jails, which would say otherwise, right? And I'm not saying everybody who's in DOC custody, obviously everybody who's in DOC custody is not convicted of a gun crime, but
that's the State Department of Corrections, state prison.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Illinois Department of Corrections, DOC. So I would push back on that narrative and the belief that prosecutors aren't doing their jobs. I would also challenge, you know, other listeners to think deeper about how we address the issues and what has caused the need to carry guns in some jurisdictions. What are we doing to make those communities safer? What does public safety for all mean? So I do think there are prosecutors who are absolutely doing their jobs. And the populations show that. The populations show that. The amount of people who are in the state of Illinois with criminal records show that as well, too.
And I want to come back to that point about why people carry guns in places with higher rates of crime like Chicago, and the way those laws are prosecuted there. But Dave, we need to take a break in a couple of minutes here. But before we do, can you talk about the sort of geographic aspect of your report? It found some disparities in the number of people from where in Illinois people come from who end up in prison for the sorts of offenses you were looking at.
Yeah. Before that, I'd like to just comment on the idea of deterrence. And I think one of the important things is that we tend to have a lot of faith and believe that deterrence is effective. And research has found that there's not as strong a deterrent effect as we believe. To Garion's point, when prosecutors get cases, they generally prosecute them and they seek the appropriate sentence. With many of the gun possession crimes, there is no option for probation. And so usually the plea agreement is they'll go to prison, but perhaps for a shorter period of time. In order for deterrence to actually work, those people who are engaged in the behavior have to actually be caught engaging in that behavior. And I think that's where the biggest gap is the prosecutors prosecute the small portion of people who are actually caught engaged in criminal activity. So to think that the prosecutors can achieve everything through their actions misses the larger systematic perspective or point on that.
Okay, and I'm gonna interrupt you there because we need to take a break here in about a minute. I will just to add on to one thing you said about the so-called truth in sentencing laws, and Illinois has very harsh penalties if you are convicted of murder, 45 years, no options for early release. It was not always ever thus, as you know. This is a change that went in the 90s. I once interviewed a man who had been released from prison. He is sort of one of the last people convicted in Illinois under the old system where you could get so-called good time credit or time off credit for your behavior in prison and doing educational activities. And if he had been convicted or committed the offense just a year or so later, he would be in prison for another 20 years now. And he had seemed to turn his life around. So just putting that out there. We're going to continue this conversation. We're talking with Dave Olson from Loyola University, Gary and Gatewood with the Illinois Justice Project, 800-222-9455. If you want to join our conversation about the way gun crimes are prosecuted in Illinois. We'll be back after a short break. This is the 21st. Stay with us. This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about a new report from Loyola University Chicago's Center for Criminal Justice Research, Policy, and Practice. It looks at the sentencing for gun possession crimes in Illinois. We're talking about that with the co-director and the lead author on the report, Dave Olson, who is a professor in the Department of Criminal Justice and Criminology at Loyola. Also, Gary and Gatewood, executive director of the nonprofit Illinois Justice Project. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation about how you think gun crimes should be handled in Illinois. Is it all about, in your view, harsher sentences for possession? And we also want to ask you what people think about racial inequities when it comes to enforcing gun laws. We want to hear from you, 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. So, Dave, how about that? Geographic disparities, racial disparities in the way these laws are enforced. Can you talk about some of the big picture findings of the report?
Yeah. Again, the research was really looking at the pattern across the state of Illinois, and what we found and what we eventually recognized is that the vast majority of these arrests and convictions occur in Cook County. Two-thirds to three-quarters of all these convictions are occurring in Cook County. But it's not evenly spread across Cook County either. It's concentrated in very specific neighborhoods in Chicago. I think one of the things we found that was most striking to folks was for class four felony gun possession offenses, which are the least serious felony, one-third of the statewide convictions in Illinois occurred in just 11 neighborhoods in Chicago, or stemmed from arrests in just 11 neighborhoods in Chicago. And the vast majority of those arrested and convicted were Black men, usually between the ages of 18 and 24. So the thing that's important to recognize about gun possession cases is they usually stem from police enforcement activities. These aren't the types of crimes that a citizen calls the police about, but rather it's the type of crime that police detect through patrol and traffic stops and things like that. So it appears that the enforcement efforts are highly concentrated in specific neighborhoods and affect primarily Black men that are relatively young adults.
Garian, were you surprised by the results of this study?
Not surprised at all. We've seen that there are targeted efforts in certain communities for quite a while. I wasn't surprised by the results of that piece. You see it, you've lived it, you've experienced it, because far too often certain communities are over-policed. This goes back to one of our older conversations, Brian. We talked about public safety for all. Public safety for all means public safety in Ravenswood, Chicago, should be the same public safety in Englewood, Chicago. We need to see a return on our investment, where some communities are being police with a heavier hand, it would lead you to believe that some of these same actions aren't happening in other communities. Now, I understand that there is a need for targeted outreach in some spaces. However, I would challenge many folks to think differently about what that outreach means and what are we actually addressing, right? Are those communities feeling safer? What are we doing to make them safer? And what are we doing to engage them in more conversations to address some of the core needs that are there? So again, I wasn't surprised by it because this is a reoccurring theme where you would be able to rattle off some of these neighborhoods instantly, and you would have been able to rattle off some of these neighborhoods 10 years ago because there was a targeted focus on those. So what improvements are we seeing and how do we work together collaboratively to get there? I am ecstatic that Professor Olson, Dr. Olson put the report out so more people can see it, because far too often these conversations around what is happening in certain areas have not been guided by the true, accurate, and transparent data that we have at our fingertips now.
Last week on the program, we spoke with Takenya Nixon, who is an assistant public defender, an attorney, criminal defense attorney in Cook County. And she recently had a guest essay in Teen Vogue titled "Rising Crime in Cities Like Chicago Should Not Lead to More Policing." And I want to just play a short clip from our interview with her.
The problem that I see with gun violence is far greater than the immediate. It's not people who have the guns or that are arrested with guns, because quite frankly, a lot of people who are arrested with unlawful use or possession of a weapon, which are the majority of the cases that I see come in, have no felony convictions in their background. And it is a licensing issue. The fact that we have the Second Amendment, which gives us the right to bear arms, but here in Illinois, the only way that you can possess a handgun or a shotgun is if you have a firearm owner's identification card. That is a license. And the simple fact of possessing it does not make it a violent crime. It just makes you not having that license. But Illinois has decided that this licensing issue, when it comes to a gun, they'll make it a felony offense. For some, because it's not always, there are misdemeanor offenses, but quite frankly, if you're Black in Chicago, you are going to be charged with a felony.
Garion, can I ask you to respond to that? I mean, the law may be the law, right? But it seems like the outcomes, at least, are different if you are a, you know, white man in Bloomington with your CCW permit carrying a firearm. You're thought, okay, that person wants to protect themselves. If you're a Black man on the west side of Chicago, maybe you haven't gone through the concealed carry licensing process, but there seems to be this orientation that probably that person is not into it, you know, carrying this weapon for self-defense. Probably they're up to no good and we need to prosecute them. Take that where you will, Gary.
Yeah, I mean, so I think you hit the nail on the head, because far too often when there are certain demographics of folks who are carrying firearms to protect themselves, they are looked at as, oh, you're a violent offender, you're a troublemaker, you're doing X, Y, and Z. Whereas you'll have their counterpart, and we'll take Bloomington, for example, and it's just, oh, this is my Second Amendment right. Well, the Second Amendment, it didn't stop for the white race, right? This is for everybody, right? The Second Amendment applies to everybody. It's been around for a while. So those same protections should be in place for Black firearm owners. There should be more outreach on FOID cards, making that process easier for people to have access to. We should have more conversations about the backlogs and updating FOID cards. What needs to be done to decrease those backlogs? What needs to be done to increase public awareness and public education around why certain people are carrying firearms? Because the narrative for far too long is, I'm a Black man. All right, so we'll take Dave and I, for instance. If I am caught with a gun, I must be up to no good. Dave, get home safely, go protect your family, right? So we have to work to change that narrative by public education and really going back, and I know I've said it before, I'm hitting this nail on the head again. This goes back to the same old additive. What is public safety for all? Because what is happening in Bloomington with that the white man carrying a gun, it's an entirely different response when you are a Black man in a different community. I don't care if you're an elected official. I don't care if you are a doctor, attorney. You have a different response in your interaction with police more times than not than you would for your white counterparts.
Dave, I wonder if you have a perspective on any of that, either what Garina just said or what Takenya Nixon had to say earlier.
Yeah, I think there's some of the interesting tension I feel in this, in the discussion around this is you can potentially address some of this by just making it easier for people to carry guns. I think the other concern is getting to the actual root of why people are carrying guns and trying to figure out, is there, you know, so we can either make it easier for you to carry a gun legally, or we can address the situation so that you don't feel that you need to carry a gun to feel safe in your community. So, you know, for those who don't want to see even more guns out on the street, I think they're a little apprehensive to say, we just need to relax the licensing procedures. The longer term, more challenging issue is address the environment that results in people feeling as though they need to carry a gun for self-protection. And some of that relates to their trust in the police. Some of that relates to prior victimization they might have experienced. But some research done in Chicago by the Urban Institute found among those young adults who illegally carried a firearm, the top two reasons were for self-protection, either for protection of themselves or protection of their friends and family members. So to Garian's point, we have to recognize that the motivation for carrying the gun, whether legally or illegally, is somewhat similar. It gets down to issues around the need for self-protection or the perceived need for a gun for that purpose.
Yeah. And we don't have time to probably go down this rabbit hole, but I've talked about this before. And if people want to look more into this idea, Jill Leovi's excellent book, Ghetto Side, really gets into this idea that where the state does not maintain its monopoly on violence, and violence tends to run seemingly out of control to people who live in that area, it becomes more like the Wild West. People feel the only way they can get justice is taking the law into their own hands. David, how might Illinois lawmakers and other actors in the criminal justice system use the results from this report to inform future policy choices?
What we're hoping it does is provide some understanding that not everybody who is convicted of possessing a firearm necessarily needs to be sentenced to prison. So the largest categories of people convicted are people who have a prior felony conviction and possess a firearm. And for them, they have to be sentenced to prison. The sentence lengths are relatively long. What we found in our research to the comments made by the public defender's interview that you aired, the majority of them have never been convicted of a violent crime. What makes them a felon is usually a prior conviction for a drug law violation or some type of property crime. And again, it gets to the point that not everybody who possesses a gun illegally, even a felon in possession, has a history or a propensity to use violence. They're likely carrying the gun for self-protection. And what we found was the vast majority of those sentenced to prison after their release were not charged with a violent crime after their release from prison. We also found that the same pattern held for people who got probation. For class four felonies, you can get probation. And what we found was prison or probation, you essentially get the same outcomes from the standpoint of public safety. The prison response, though, is much more expensive and also potentially more detrimental to that individual's future.
Let's take another call now. James is on the line from Central Illinois. James, thank you for calling in.
Thanks for having me. Hey, I just wanted to make a comment. You know, I live in a rural part of Illinois, and I am a firearms owner, and I have a CCW permit. You know, obviously I have a FOID card, follow all the rules and the laws, law-abiding citizen, exercising my Second Amendment right. My comment is what was said earlier, you know, about what legislation or what can the legislature do about current situation, you know, that you're talking about. The problem is the actual legislation that's been passed. You talked about firearm owners who don't have a FOID card in Chicago, possibly, you know, not being violent offenders, but yet are subject to the penalties for not having a FOID card. But those penalties are subject to everybody, and that is the law in Illinois. And if you don't have a FOID card and you are illegally possessing the firearm, you're subject to the penalties, which is a felony offense. I would say Illinois is the only state in the union that has a FOID card. And in order to exercise your Second Amendment right, you have to pay money for the FOID card. And if you wanted to carry a conceal for your own personal protection, you have to pay another $150 plus the cost of a class and continuing education, which costs hundreds of dollars. So is it any wonder why people in poorer parts of the state can't afford those types of licenses? So licensing and additional laws is not the answer, in my opinion. My opinion is getting rid of the unnecessary laws that discriminate against African American and other populations that can't afford to pay those types of fees, and just in order to exercise their Second Amendment right. So I don't believe additional laws or licenses are needed. What's needed is to get rid of it altogether and follow states like Tennessee and Texas and other states where it's constitutional carry, where if you are a resident of that state, you can exercise your right without having to pay the government money.
All right, let me ask my guest to respond to that. James, thank you for calling in. Thank you for sharing your perspective. Garion, how about that? I mean, there is, especially listening to Kenya Nixon, the assistant public defender we heard earlier, you can almost imagine that she was, might have some things in common with Second Amendment advocates who want to see Illinois' firearms regulation regime sort of wiped away.
I mean, I think there's obviously some inequities on the ability to pay for your FOID card. I think we should address those inequities. Obviously, a Second Amendment right should be extended to everyone in the state and in the country where it is safe and can be done in a manner where people are not impacted in a negative way. So I would agree in part that there is a need for more support for people. I would twist James' comments just a little bit, and I would say there's a need for more support in areas where those financial resources may not be available to offer those protections for people who may need to carry a firearm to protect themselves and their families. And I'll turn it over to Dave.
Dave, just about 30 seconds left in our conversation. I don't know if you have anything you want to add to that.
Yeah, I think the one takeaway is we shouldn't be focused exclusively on allowing people the easier access to guns and focusing exclusively on the criminal justice system as the response to the problem. That, what we talked about earlier is it really gets to addressing some of the underlying issues in communities that result in crime, result in people not feeling safe and therefore needing feeling the need to carry a gun for self-protection.
David Olson is professor in the Department of Criminal Justice and Criminology and co-director of the Center for Criminal Justice Research, Policy, and Practice at Loyola University Chicago. Garion Gatewood is executive director of the Illinois Justice Project. Garion, Dave, always good to talk with you. Thank you for sharing your perspectives with us today on the 21st.
Thanks a lot.
Our pleasure. Take care.
More to come after a short break. You're listening to the 21st. Stay with us.